It's 8:12 now. Good morning. Well, the Semi-County Council meeting and work session starting at about 2:50 tomorrow afternoon at the Sheldon Richens Building. On the phone with a preview of the agenda, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So were you part of the road tour to Crested Butte and Montrose this year?
I was not. I had a military trip that I had to take the weekend prior. That included one of my work days, and just because of some other things that are going on in the office, I chose to stay behind, and Janie Young, my deputy, went on that trip and represented the staff.
Okay. Let's see. Summit County Finance Officer Matt Levitt will complete his review of the independent audit. This was continued from last month, given that some of the items weren't yet complete. So what were they, and are we done here?
Well, it was mainly finishing up a couple of items that were still pending as far as assets and the inventory of that, which then delayed getting the management letter done by the auditor. So now that that's all been published or at least been printed and has been provided to the council, and they're going to do a final review of that tomorrow.
Okay, so bottom line, does the county have a clean bill of health in terms of its financial operations?
I have not reviewed the management letter yet. I'm going to do that today in my preparation for the council meeting tomorrow. I would imagine, as with all management letters, there's going to be things that we need to take a look at and make improvements or tighten up our processes around. Usually there are things around state law that change or interpretations by the state auditor on things that they'd like to see different in how we do our accounting. Again, nothing has been pointed out to us at this point that would cause alarm.
The council will also receive a report so far on the Cedar Crest Village overlay. This is a concept being proposed by some 27 landowners with some 1,100 acres there in the Hoytsville area. I guess maybe talk a little bit about the involvement of UDOT's State Transportation Infrastructure Program, that's known as STIP, that somehow relates to the Creamery Lane interchange.
Yeah, so you know, as part of this process, you know, they're looking at the overall, how could this 1,100 acres develop? And one of the questions that has come up through this process since Creamery Lane crosses Highway 80 at this point is it possible to contemplate an interchange at that location on I-80 in the Hoytsville area? And so that requires a question like that to be asked by the county council. In order for UDOT to formally get into those conversations. So the landowners involved would like to discuss that with the council and see if the council would start to pursue that. That doesn't mean that an interchange is imminent in any way. It would just be the beginning of a conversation.
So why isn't this before the Eastern Planning Commission? I mean, why does it come into council first?
Well, this process is not even close to being done yet as far as a recommendation from the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. This is just an update on the process. You know, this is the first one that the county has gone through, the first village overlay process, and the council is very interested in how this process is working. And of course, the landowners and the planning commissioners involved in the committee that are looking at this are interested in updating the council on that. So it's very informal at this point. When it actually does come to a recommended planning application that would be completed through this village overlay process, that will go to the full planning commission for its review.
All right. Also, looks like we're beginning the kind of annual process of property tax stipulations. If somebody wants to appeal their property tax bill, is there a deadline or has that come and gone?
There is a deadline, and, you know, I don't have that in front of me.
Okay.
I will make sure that I don't misspeak for the assessor and the auditor in doing those appeals, but I'll get back to you with that deadline before the end of the day. But, yeah, these have been coming forward for about the past month and a half with a review of new stipulations that have come up from the assessor and through the auditor's process. And, you know, the council has been considering those each week as a new list has been published.
Okay. At 5 o'clock, discussion, and it does say possible decision. That's news to me, about a connection between Silver Creek from the Bittner Frontage Road. The county has been looking at four different options, ranging from the frontage road, known as the frontage road, which runs close to I-80. The other three that are increasingly aligned further away up the hill. Last we had heard was that you were down to two options, I guess kind of a hybrid, it looks like, of options 2 and 3.
Yeah, that's correct. And if you go back, you know, this is the last two times this has kind of come in front of the council, the last time and this time, they've both been listed as a possible decision item. And, you know, that's if the council wants to make a decision, they can. I don't like to get out in front of them, but I doubt whether a decision will be made tomorrow because the one hybrid kind of Church Street solution that was suggested by the some members of the Bittner family at the last public meeting about this in front of the council. That has not gotten a lot of public scrutiny at this point. So I believe that's what the council wants to hear tomorrow, as well as the overall, the fact that they're wanting to eliminate two options and with those two remaining, what some preferences might be or other concerns that residents might have. Certainly, since this has come up again, as an agenda item, we've heard a lot more from Silver Creek residents. So I think we're going to have some very lively discussion about it.
Yeah. What's the criteria here to make a choice? I mean, we're talking, of course, good emergency access, bike lanes, any other factors?
Well, I mean, the emergency access, that health, safety, and welfare part of this in an area, you know, as Pat Putt has pointed out, of over 600 residences that only have one way in, one way out. That's a big concern, probably the main concern. But then the opportunities that it brings up to have alternative transportation, especially a better bicycle transportation opportunity, as well as transit opportunity in the future, when you can loop a bus through instead of just being able to bring it in on the interchange. Is a much better situation. So those opportunities are always there, and you know, as well as impact to current property owners. And I think we're going to hear a lot about that tomorrow.
So, do any of the options require any private property purchases, or perhaps even condemnation?
They will all require some amount of property acquisition. And, you know, whether that got to the point of condemnation, I'm not sure. You know, certainly that's not our practice. We would much rather negotiate right-of-way acquisitions. But, you know, since this access is necessary, you know, acquisition is going to have to happen.
Yeah. Now, is the Bittner Fire Station, I think that's what we're talking about, right, emergency services. So is that the closest to Silver Creek? I mean, what about the Promontory Station? And I know there's not a connection there either, but I guess I've just kind of got to thinking that with all of the development happening in Silver Creek Village, why aren't we thinking about a connection to the Promontory Station that then gets all of those residents to the mixed-use zone that we're hearing so much about?
Well, I think in the long run, we would prefer to do both. You know, having both connections would be useful in the future. from certainly a health, safety, and welfare perspective, which is our main goal, but also just options for travel. But you know, this is a connection that has been pursued for quite a long time since the transportation plan was completed in 2009, and it is the one that's currently on the table. Our active transportation plan does include trying to get that connection between Silver Creek and Silver Creek Village, but there is a major undertaking there of a new underpass under the highway, under Highway 80, in order to do that.
Yeah, I get that. At the same time, though, I mean, I just sometimes feel like what we do is just such short-term planning. I mean, why aren't we looking out 20, 30 years?
Well, I think our transportation plan does that. This connection between Silver Creek Road and Bittner Road is certainly part of that long-term planning. It also is clearly making up a shortcoming that wasn't there back when these developments were originally contemplated. The plans also include that connection. I mean, there is a connection right now, even though it's not a viable vehicle connection under the highway between Silver Creek and Silver Creek Village. That is a logical spot for a future larger connection. So I think those things are there, as well as, you know, some of the longer term planning that has been done with interchanges. I believe that some of that has been done. And you're right that some of these developments have come in and don't have that broader look at what the transportation system is going to require. And I think our current plans do that.
Finally, I wanted to ask you about the fact that Mountain Life Church has an application to expand thousands of square feet and I think proposing about a 500-lot spot parking lot. That's before the county. If the county decided to go towards this Church Street option, is there some kind of quid pro quo here happening with this?
Well, I'm not aware that we actually have an application in on that. I know that they've been in front of the Planning Commission to kind of gauge the appetite of the Planning Commission on their plans, and they've talked a lot with our planning department on that, but I'm not sure that a current application is in. But you know, that I think that project is out there and is being pursued.
Okay, but again, that the county doesn't have any kind of deal with the church that they would approve any kind of development there in exchange for the property they might need?
Without an application, there's nothing to contemplate. You know, there's no deals to be made between what we're contemplating on a road and development. You know, development has to follow the code.
Okay. Finally, wanted to bring up the public hearing on a special exception being requested for the Mine Climbing Gym. This is for the business park near Quinn's Junction. The applicant is asking for a height exception to accommodate the climbing walls from 32 feet to 48 feet, but the staff recommending against that. How come?
Well, as you recall, a special exception has to meet a kind of a four-way test almost, where it has to meet whether it's detrimental to public health, safety, and welfare. Is the intent of the code met with the special exception? Is there any reasonable or equitable process other than a special exception that an applicant can go through, or are there unique circumstances here that would warrant it? The applicant feels like it meets those four criteria. Our planning department that's reviewed this has a different opinion of that. So that's what's going to be discussed by the council.
Is this where the council's approval of the Woodward special exception comes back to bite them?
I think each special exception is unique. There might be some, it might seem on the surface that there's some relation there, but that's, you know, I think the council will determine this based on the evidence that's in front of them.
Tom, anything else you'd like to mention?
Kind of an exciting day here at the county. You recall about a year to a year and a half ago, the council signed a purchase agreement for 460 acres that will include both open space and some institutional use space out on the 40 corridor, kind of south of our Justice Center. I'm going to sign closing documents on that today.
Okay, and we paying how much for that?
It ends up being north of $8 million of recreational open space bond money, with some settlement money also going to the EPA and the federal public lands trustees to settle some liability issues.
Okay. And again, at this point, the open space institutional uses, we haven't really thought of at this point.
Well, I mean, we do know that, there's probably some transit back of house issues that will be out there. We have some master plans that would indicate that maybe some solid waste type activities could go out there, but we haven't master planned that, so we don't have the full list yet.
Okay, Tom, hey, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow to discuss plat amendments, the second phase of the Woodside Park affordable housing development, and more. In the studio with me now, I have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson, along with Senior Planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. The first item on the agenda is a continuation on Lot 61 of the Marsac mining claim. This is a zoning change?
This is a zoning change. It's a very intricate and technical analysis. Marsac 61 is a historic mining claim. The lowest portion of the claim includes the explosives bunker at the Judge Tunnel. And the upper part of the claim is all the way up in Pod A of Empire Pass. Over the course of the years, the ownership has been transitioning. Different maps have shown different things. We're just trying to clean up what the zoning map says. And then if we go forward, the applicant may consider development on the site. It's about 5 acres. Most of it is steep. Most of it currently is zoned open space.
Okay. So where would that development take? Closer to the Lady Morgan chairlift?
No, it would be adjacent to the Moonshadow subdivision and Empire Residences, which is where the big curve is and the big buildings in Empire Pass.
Okay. Let's see. The city is undertaking a visioning process for 2020. The Planning Commission will receive an update. Thoughtful planning seems like a necessary component of that. As we get an idea of what people want Park City to be, what role will the Planning Commission and the Commission have in that?
So the Planning Department and the Planning Commission have the role of sorting out sort of this anecdotal information into a coherent policy. We have the 2030 vision of the city. We have the general plan from 2014. We need to sort out what the public is saying now relative to those two documents and come up with a cogent policy of moving forward. The Planning Department is supportive of this, and we want to hear what the Planning Commission has got to say. The Planning Commission will review it. One of the things we're watching very carefully is to make sure that we just don't have the usual suspects out there talking about what they see the vision of the town to be. We want to make sure we're more inclusive and respond to those folks that normally don't participate in the public process.
So where have we lacked foresight in the city's planning efforts in the past that we're trying to correct now? I guess I'm thinking about the work we're trying to do to correct some of the traffic and circulation issues in Old Town.
Oh my, that. We could do a whole hour and a half on every mistake I've ever made. But, I don't think we predicted rideshare very well. I don't think we predicted affordable housing very well. I don't think we predicted the effect of construction workers on the affordable housing market. We never had a serious conversation about this drive to be the best in the country, requiring additional employees in the school district and the hospital and some of the other items. So there's a whole mantra of things that probably just weren't considered at the time when we were going through these general plan items. So, you balance that against these sort of visionary ideas that people have, And I go back to a book that I quote on a regular basis called The Moral Arc. And The Moral Arc makes the case that utopia is nowhere, and the Latin translation of utopia is nowhere. So utopia does not exist. What we're trying to do is manage change to keep Park City, Park City, and those promises we made to the government, to the public.
Let's see. The city, as applicant, bringing back the Woodside Park Phase 2 housing master plan development. This is after the Board of Adjustment had remanded it back, saying that the setback reductions were not warranted. So I guess, Hannah, you're still contending that those setbacks are?
Yes, so correct. The only item that's going back is the setbacks. And really what's being asked of Planning Commission is to re-review sort of their decision-making and whether or not they erred in that. And so what the applicant has submitted is an update to their defense of the setback reduction and how that does articulate architectural interest and variation. And so that's what's measured, what setback reduction is measured against. And so really what we saw was that the applicant bolstered what they had produced earlier, and then the findings of fact reflected that as well.
Okay, so we don't meet the setbacks, but we are infringing into the setbacks because we think it's a better project that way?
Yes, so I'm happy to clarify that. So when you have a master plan development over an acre, which this is over an acre, there is a boundary setback of 25 feet. Anyone who's ever been to Woodside, the area that Woodside Park Phase 2 is in, you'll note that that's actually in the Recreation Commercial Zone, or RC, which has much lower setbacks than 25 feet. And so the applicant is actually only asking to go down to the zone required setback, so basically to match the other development around them. And there is one other exception they're asking for, but it's actually on an internal lot line within the project. And so it really wouldn't be noticed on the boundary of the project. And so, you know, they're not asking for anything further than what would be required of a private developer on a project less than an acre. So they're just asking to go down to the recreation commercial zoning setbacks.
Yeah. So, Bruce, because the city is the applicant in this, as planning director, how do you look
so
at something like this?
Hannah and I are on the regulatory side, and the city's pretty good about maintaining a firewall between us and the application. Hannah's reviewing the project consistent with the code, and the Planning Commission is reviewing no different than we would do with any other applicant. And Hannah is also correct. Let me reiterate, we are not asking for a change in the setbacks. All we're asking for, the applicant is asking for, is setbacks to the zone setbacks and not the master plan development setbacks. So there's no encroachment, no violations of the code. It's the same as Deer Valley or Park City Mountain Resort or any other MPD we have.
So if this was a private developer, then, Hannah, that would be a staff recommendation that, yes, we allow it?
Yeah, I think the planning department can confidently say that this project has been reviewed against the land management code, whether it's a private or public entity.
So to be clear, the Board of Adjustment in the review of the appeal did not deny the setback application. The Board of Adjustment said, you guys, Planning Commission, you need to make sure your findings are more clear. And so what Hannah is doing is going back to the Planning Commission and reviewing the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and conditions of approval so that it's clear to the public why this decision was made.
Okay. The city's annexation policy plan amendment receiving its second official public hearing as per state code. One landowner in the area is looking to include in its annexation expansion map, spoke at the last meeting. Since then, have you heard from more people who are potentially interested in being annexed?
At this point, no. We did include the Girl Scout property in the annexation from the last meeting, and one mine claim that's up in Bonanza Flat in the annexation policy plan as well. Also being included at this point is a small parcel of land at the intersection of US 40 and 248, where there is a discussion with Summit County regarding a park and ride. So it's in the northeast quadrant between Old 40 and New 40 and north of 248. It's a kind of lumpy little hill that lives there by the stoplight. And so that's included in the annexation plan as well.
Who's the property owner then for the Bonanza Flat property?
The Bonanza Flat property. We own most of Bonanza Flat. The Girl Scouts own several acres up there, so they've made application, and there's one small mining claim, an acre or two, that was kind of an anomaly in the boundary that we're trying to clean up.
Okay. Let's see. The Planning Commission also looking at a landmark historic site at 901 Woodside Avenue. The applicant proposing to construct a private driveway there. Anything tricky about that, given that it's a landmark?
Oh, absolutely. Site? This one is an interesting case. And what it comes down to at the highest level, Leslie, is how the city allocates public resources. Parking on the street in the right-of-way is a public resource. And historic homes are not required to have parking. So the city's made a conscious decision to allocate a public resource for parking for historic homes. The alternative to the proposal is to lift the house up and put a garage underneath it in order to achieve parking, which would also reduce the available parking on the street because the driveway can't be parked in. In this particular case, the applicant is proposing a driveway and platted unbuilt right-of-way in order to access the garage from the site, which potentially would preserve the landmark site, the landmark landscaping, and the landmark house itself. So we are considering with the Planning Commission whether this is what we call the sort of least damaging practicable alternative, where we allocate minimum resources in order to protect a landmark structure. The other position is that you're taking city resources and walkability and snow storage and parking availability and all those things away in order to provide parking that does not necessarily require, in order to provide parking to a house that doesn't necessarily require parking because it's a landmark. So this is how we're balancing city resources and asking the Planning Commission to consider that balance.
So what's the recommendation on this then?
The recommendation is to do the driveway. We're looking at additional walkability enhancements that the city would do on the 9th Street right-of-way. There is a walkway to the north and the 10th Street walkway and to the south. This is very similar to the situation on Crescent Tram between Main Street and Park Ave, where there was a public right-of-way and parking requirements at the same time. There's a dozen or so situations like this in town.
Yeah. Looking ahead to the City Council agenda this week, they'll be having a work session on changes to the land management code regarding affordable housing. KPCW working on a series of stories around workforce housing. So what's in the land management code that enforces the development of workforce housing by employers?
All right. So there's a connection between the housing resolution, which is managed by the City Council, and the land management code to deliver affordable housing. And there's a specific percentage in the code that an application would have to deliver, whether it's the hospital or the ski areas or any other master plan developments in town. What's going in front of the City Council is a specific request on the council's part to look at how or what sort of subsidy wants to be delivered in order to achieve affordable housing. So what is the city required to deliver to make sure affordable housing is completed on a public-private sector partnership or on a private partnership? So if the city is asked to contribute land, that's a subsidy to the project. At what level is that a business decision? And so Cascadia Partners is coming in, and they're going to have a sort of a financial conversation with the council on what's the business plan for delivering housing? What's effective in the marketplace? They interviewed a dozen or so of our developers and builders in town. They've interviewed us and city council people in order to get an idea of just what exactly we're being asked to deliver. About a year ago, planning delivered some proposed changes to the land management code to make affordable housing easier and more consistent and, you know, sort of more transparent to the development community. The council looked at it and said, yeah, this is a pretty good idea, but we better test it against the marketplace before we move forward with the code, and that's what we're doing now.
So Deer Valley Resort and Park City Mountain Resort, we've heard from both that they do plan to start developing parking lot areas. These master plan approvals given decades ago, I mean, so they have, I guess, rolled those over. So, I mean, are there any affordable housing requirements as those two projects move forward?
Yeah. Park City Mountain Resort has an obligation right now to deliver on the order of 80 affordable beds for employees. Deer Valley right now is in compliance with their requirement to deliver housing. If they expand or open up the master plan for some reason or another, then they would come under the new development agreement.
Which is what, 20%?
20% under the housing resolution.
Yeah, and the 80 Park City Mountain, those are not included, or are they included in what's going to be developed there at the base area of canyons?
They're required to be delivered at the time this development comes forward.
Yeah, but I'm saying, are they being rolled into that 1,100 beds at the base of the Canyons Village?
I don't know if I know the answer to that, where those units are going to go or where those beds are going to go.
Or is that all just to deal with the Canyons Resort development?
No, the 80 beds right now is not rolled into the 1,000 or so beds of housing they're doing at the Canyons.
Okay. And what have you seen, if anything, from, because I had heard somebody say they saw plans for the Park City Mountain base development, and I think it was like 7 or 8 stories. Is that really what we're looking at?
Well, that's kind of a tough question to answer. The original approved document from 1997 allowed 7 and 8 story buildings on the north end of the main parking lot. And the Marriott currently sits around, the Marriott, which was phase one of the 97 approval, sits at about 110 feet in height. And that was done in order to exchange all the development rights off where this Three Kings chairlift is. We have not seen the plan for the base area at this point, and regulatory has not seen that. However, we do know that the developers are conducting a public outreach program and talking to the neighbors and having conversations about what they want to see and what they don't want to see.
Okay. Anything from Deer Valley?
Well, we're having conversations with Deer Valley Resort on their winter parking plan and the overflow conversation we had with the council and the planning commission a couple of weeks ago. We're giving some consideration to the application to do some additional grading on the parking lot and having a conversation about whether cars can be allowed on the street or not.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Hannah, Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News, time now 8:44. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, this month's guest at the PC Marks Lunchtime Learning tomorrow is Park City Sustainability Manager Celia Peterson. She joins me on the phone now. Good morning, Celia.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
Doing great. So the free lunchtime learning at the Mark is always held on the second Tuesday of the month between noon and 1 in the party room. Tomorrow, your topic is the air we breathe. Compared to many places in the world, the air in Summit and Wasatch County is pretty nice. So what's your message here?
Yep. So what we're going to talk about tomorrow is basically an air quality 101. So what contributes to bad air quality in the valley and why? We'll talk about particulate matter, and a particular interest to Park City is ozone levels. So we'll look at the particularities of Park City and specific concerns that we might have here and what that looks like. We'll talk about how pollution impacts our air quality, but really want to focus on what this does to our health and more so what you can do about it. So we'll talk about solutions to prevent bad air quality and different ways that you can protect yourself.
Yeah. Should we be worried about the air quality?
If you go down to Salt Lake, you should be, especially if you're exercising. I was actually supposed to be down there pan cycling today, but my team canceled it because of bad air quality. So it is something that we're learning more and more about. And lots of studies have come out recently in the past couple of years that are linking poor air quality, particulate matter, to all sorts of different health issues.
So what can people do to ensure that the air stays clean?
Well, there's different times of the day that you can exercise, and there are all sorts of things that you can do around transportation. We'll also talk about some solutions that you could do to prevent yourself from poor indoor air quality. But yeah, you'll have to show up to really learn more. Yeah. I don't want to give it all away.
So one of the things that the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission and County Council has done is basically banned all wood-burning devices. I guess if Park City was so concerned about air quality, that's something they would follow in their lead. How come we haven't done anything like that?
I'm not sure why we haven't done that yet. I've been talking with Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment and helping them promote a campaign that they're doing right now for so people that can swap out their wood-burning stoves for something that's a little bit more healthy. But that's something I can look into. I don't know the answer, though, off the top of my head.
Okay. Again, if people are interested, the topic is the air we breathe. Celia Peterson will be at the PC Mark tomorrow, noon to 1 p.m. Anything else you wanted to mention, Celia?
Yeah, the first 10 people to show up will get a free energy conservation kit. So there's some items in there that can help keep the air inside your home good. So hope to see you there.
Okay, thanks for your time. Well, tomorrow, the Park City Museum and the Friends of the Ski Mountain Mining History are hosting a lecture called Overhead Tramways in Park City. It'll be presented by Steve Latham between 5 and 6 p.m. at the Education and Collections Center on Sidewinder Drive. In the studio with details, I have Museum Director Sandra Morrison. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us, who's Steve Latham?
So Steve's actually a Utah native, born and raised in Park City. Went to the Park City High School when it was in the building we now know as the library. And when he was going to college down at the University of Utah, he got a job at the brand new Park City, well, then called Treasure Mountains, but now what we know as Park City Mountain Resort. And he didn't ski. So interestingly, he grew up in Park City and didn't ski, but he got the job as the foreman of the gondola, the brand new mile-long gondola, and he was the foreman at the angle station, for those of you who remember riding it, and that it changed direction, which is why it was called the angle station, about halfway up the mountain. So at the time he was going to school, he got really interested in the aerial tramways that the mine companies operated, you know, at that point 60 years earlier, now 100 years ago. And he actually wrote his thesis about the aerial tramways, and specifically the Silver King aerial tramway. And so he's, you know, Park City's foremost historian on our aerial tramways, of which we had three in Park City. So he's a great person to give a lecture about the connections between current ski lift technology and mining aerial tramway technology, because they really are. The ski technology is based on the mining technology. Both were designed to move a lot of heavy material or people, you know, up the hill and in all kinds of weather, you know, for long periods of time. So.
Okay, so we had the Crescent Tramway.
Right. So we had the aerial tramways were the Silver King, which is the big steel towers that run next to the town chairlift, right? And then we had the Judge aerial tramway, which ran from up the street from the Marsac building here, that went across the top of Prospect and then up Daly Ave all the way to the Judge Mill, which is no longer there. That burned. But you can see at various points the cable, because when the loading station at the top burned to the ground, the cable fell, and it still exists in various places. And that's also metal towers, so you can see those. I think there's somewhere around 25 towers on that one. And then the third one was the King Kong, which was the Silver King Consolidated Mining Company, and those were wood towers. So we actually only have two still standing, and we have the counterweight, which is the wood structure at the top of First Time Chairlift. And the Friends of Ski Mining Mountain History and the Park City Museum, we restored that two summers ago. So that's now on a brand new concrete foundation, and hopefully it'll stand for another 100 years. And that aerial tramway went all the way down to Iron Horse, about where the Public Works building is today. And there was a big mill there that processed the ore. So, of course, none of that exists today. But it's interesting that it basically went through what today is town. Back then, that was sort of the outskirts. Yeah, so.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so again, an hour presentation, I'll leave time for
questions. Yeah, so it starts at 5 o'clock. We will start promptly, but, you know, plenty of parking in Prospector, our new Education and Collection Center buildings at 2079, and you can park in the lot outside, and then the big lot across the street, because it's all communal parking in Prospector.
Okay. Yeah. Do people need to RSVP or just?
No, just come. Yeah. And like I said, but come, you know, come 10 minutes early, mm-hmm. so you can get a seat and, you know, chat with Steve before he starts, and because we will start promptly at 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see you tomorrow night.
All right. Sandra,
thanks
for coming by. Sandra Morrison is with the Park City Museum. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Summit and Wasatch County chapter of Habitat for Humanity hosting its annual overall ball. In the studio with details, I have the executive director, Shelley Barris. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is September
13th. Yeah.
Okay.
And Friday the 13th is right. Friday. Yeah.
Going to be at Legacy Lodge.
Yes.
Park City Mountain.
Yes. Yep. So we start at 5:30, so you can come and have some cocktail hour and look at the silent auction, and then we have a lovely dinner and live auction as well. And all the proceeds of this evening go to fund our two houses that we've started construction in Silver Creek Village.
Great. Tell me, tickets are how much?
Tickets are $150 a person, so a really great deal for a fun evening to support a good cause.
All right. And you call it the overall ball because it's just an opportunity to take it easy.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, the construction theme, we love our overalls and hard hats. And so we encourage people to do that. Be casual, decorate your overalls. And we do have a hard hat contest this year. So if you decorate your hard hat and come with the most interesting one, you will win a prize.
Okay. Tickets are just online. Is that how to do it?
Yep. You can go online to habitat-utah.org and right on the front page, click the button to get tickets. And we do still have some available. So we encourage people to come out this great Friday evening. It's going to get over this cold weather and be beautiful, sunny, 70 degrees, right?
So tell me about some of the things you've got in the live auction.
Oh, yeah. We have some really fun adventures. So I think our highlight is something that's a repeat from last year, the Yellowstone TV show that's being filmed here locally. We get a set tour. You get a tour of the studio, and you get to watch some filming happening at the set. So it's really fun. I was able to go last year with the group that bought it and kind of see what was happening. And it was really a fun thing just to see behind the scenes. So that's a great one. We have a trip to Mexico. We have some fun local Wasatch Brew Pub is doing a tasting and a behind-the-scenes tour, as well as Hugo Coffee Roasters. We did it last year, a coffee and cocktail education and tasting, and it was really a fun event. So we have some fun things that will be at our live auction this year.
Okay. How much do you hope to raise?
Yeah, so we're really hoping that we can bring in $150,000. That's really almost one of those houses, and we'll match the money we have, and it will help us finish those two homes this year.
Yeah, so you've got two homes, and those are just two of several, though, right?
Right. Those are the two single-family homes, and then we will start a campaign to start working on townhomes. So we have three different lots out there that will allow us to build up to 24 townhomes. And the first building will be a 10-plex, so 10 attached townhomes. And that's what we'll be moving on to next. We'll hope to be in front of the Planning Commission this fall to get that subdivision approved.
Yeah, that's going to be something different than what you've done. You've always done single-family homes. So do you have a contractor that knows? I mean, because a lot of it's sweat equity. People have to help build the house.
Right, for sure. So that it is going to be different for us in this community. It's definitely something that other habitats across the country do. And so we have a lot of great mentors out there that are working with us. And, you know, we are looking to partner with contractors as well. And we are in the process. We have a job posting right now. We're hiring our first construction manager at Habitat here locally. So that will be a great difference for us as well.
Yeah. So has the construction on the houses started? You're well underway?
We have we have broken ground on both of them, and we're in the footings and foundation stage. Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the people who get to live there, has that application process started?
Right. So we held one application round, and we are getting ready to open another one as well for the second home as well as for our townhome. So it's time to get going on that already and get people aware of what's happening and start the application process. So as soon as we're done with the overall ball, we'll be putting out some notifications and start our application process once more.
Okay, but no one's been selected at this point.
We do have one homeowner, our first home, and she'll be at the overall ball with us. Very excited to celebrate with us. Her name is Kirsten, and she works here locally at a bank, and she's very excited to be a part of this.
I bet. And so it's an application process in terms of it's not a lottery. I mean,
no.
It goes through several reviews then, huh?
Yes, exactly. So we do a financial review first and then move through our process.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope, I don't think so. Just, you know, if you are available Friday night, come and join us. A great opportunity to raise the money to build these houses.
Great. Shelley, thanks for your time this
morning.
Thank
you.